A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Cam Edwards, your host, glad that you've joined us today. Coming up on the program, Rob O'Donnell from Brothers Before Others, former New York police officer, going to join us on the program. Talking about some of the orders that are being put in place around the country. We saw this in Philadelphia yesterday, where at least some officers working some shifts are being told not to make arrests for low-level, and I guess your definition of low-level nonviolent crimes might vary here, but that is one of the latest repercussions in the coronavirus pandemic. You now have, you know, folks that are worried about overcrowding or the spread of the disease in jails and prisons, where you've got a lot of individuals who are in close contact with one another. Kind of hard to maintain that social distancing, which, you know, again, I think I've seen a lot of folks kind of poo-poo the Americans who are running out right now and buying a firearm, maybe for the first time in their life, and scooping up ammunition. We'll talk about this with Rob O'Donnell, but I, nobody's buying a gun right now because they want to shoot the virus. They are buying firearms and ammunition right now because they don't know what's coming next, because their world has gone topsy-turvy over the last week or so. And I think that stories like this, what's happening, in Philadelphia and around the country, not going to make anybody feel any better or more sedate about where we might be headed over the next couple of weeks. So with that in mind, we've seen the numbers out of Colorado now. We're starting to get a little bit better idea of just how high the surge in sales and ammunition and firearms really is. We've heard from a lot of individual gun stores, ammo.com yesterday, talking about they've seen almost a 300% increase in the amount of ammunition that they've sold compared to like a month ago. Colorado Bureau of Investigation now says that the number of firearm sales, background checks, I should say, for gun sales in Colorado, or gun transfers in Colorado, have doubled in the past week. A week ago, 7,000 firearms background checks were conducted on. Past week, 14,000. And I can imagine that we are seeing similar volume, probably higher numbers in higher population states, but similar volume all around the country. I spoke with my friend here in Farmville, Virginia, who owns a gun store. I did several thousand dollars worth of ammunition sales yesterday in a small town, small gun shop. That's pretty unbelievable. A friend of mine who works at one of our local grocery stores ran into her yesterday as I briefly broke lockdown to run to the store for a couple of essential items, which were in stock, I should say, wasn't stock. And she described the rush of the grocery store as folks getting ready for a 5-foot snowstorm the day before Thanksgiving. It has just been that sort of mad rush. And we are seeing that at gun stores around the country as well. Again, I think in large part, it's not because of one specific threat. It's not because of one specific concern. It is because we don't know what's coming next. It's just that simple. Listen to our conversation with Rob O'Donnell from Brothers Before Others about the new abnormal and how it is affecting law enforcement operations in some parts of the country. Rob O'Donnell is with us on the program. Rob, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
You bet. Every day it just seems the news has headlines that would have been unthinkable just a couple of days ago, as I was writing the story yesterday for Bearing Arms about the Legal Aid Society of New York City calling for a moratorium on all arrests, and basically the emptying out of all of the city's jails in order to prevent the spread of the coronavirus inside these jails. I'm writing this up and I'm talking about how crazy this is. And that's never going to happen. As I'm writing this story, I see your tweet about the orders that came down for, I guess it was one of the shifts in Philadelphia PD, 4 to midnight shift, now being told officers are that, if you catch somebody committing a nonviolent offense, whether it's auto burglary, theft from an individual, retail theft, don't arrest these people. You can temporarily detain them. You can put them in cuffs. You can get their information and confirm their identity. But after you get all your paperwork in order, let them go and bring this paperwork back to the detectives division so that maybe a bench warrant can be issued at some future point. Rob, this isn't just Philadelphia now, is it? I mean, we're starting to see more jurisdictions take steps like this.
Yeah, I broke this yesterday with Philadelphia, and just this morning, the Brooklyn DA's office has said they were going to stop prosecuting low-level offenses. And what I found ironic about it and telling is that they stated it's because they caved to the criminal lobby, saying that they will not be prosecuted, not because of health and safety, but because of the criminal lobby. So, you know, are they really looking out for the public welfare of both criminals and the police officers and the public? Or are they looking to push a social agenda is my big question here.
Well, I am sure. In fact, I know, because we've seen this, that there are individuals out there who are trying to use this. I mean, you know, Rahm Emanuel, right? Never let a crisis go to waste. And there are those individuals who have that mindset right now of, oh, boy, we're in this emergency situation and let's try to advance our policy agendas going forward. I get the argument of, if we're trying to socially distance ourselves, it's hard to do that in a jail or a prison setting, maintain a 6-foot distance between individuals. I said yesterday on Bearing Arms that, you know, solitary confinement might now be a privilege and not a punishment, in these spaces. And I get that argument. At the same time, what happens when people feel like they've got the green light to go out and commit these types of crimes, because they feel like, you know, because they maybe they read the headlines, oh, no arrest. They don't understand. Okay, well, I'm still going to get detained if I get caught. Still going to be a bench warrant. There hopefully will still be consequences down the road. This just to me seems like, you know, as we're trying to strike this balance between preparing ourselves and mitigating the spread of this disease, that we're also now going to be putting some additional stressors on our criminal justice system and on our first responders out in the street.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, do we really have faith in a DA like Mr. Krasner in Philadelphia that when there's thousands of bench warrants in these months to follow, that he's really going to follow through and not do just do a blanket, you know, adjournment on these things? Are they really going to have the same follow through? You know, career criminals, your hard criminals are repeat offenders. If they know they're going to get a slap on the wrist, even if they're taking their information and let go, are they still going to repeat? You know, how many crimes do they commit before they're even caught for the one that they were caught for? And then they're just released again to commit more. You know, why aren't we using proven methods like letting the officers use their discretion on who they should arrest and who they shouldn't arrest? You know, these officers have great discretion out in the field. They are very keenly aware, because they're giving a lack of proper protection equipment to deal with this virus, lack of information to deal with it. You know, let them use their discretion out on the street who they should arrest and who they don't. I get this information from the police officers that are out in the streets that just feel these directives are egregious. And like you said with the jails, you know, why aren't these DAs, why aren't these mayors, why aren't these police chiefs asking for a moratorium on crime to protect the criminals from being subjected to this virus? You know, at the same time, they're threatening to arrest business owners and misdemeanors for opening their business for their livelihoods, or people to leave their house because they're congregating somewhere. You know, they're threatening to arrest them, but here they are giving a full pass to criminals. You know, why aren't they dealing deals in jail where, yes, they're limiting, you know, feeding prisoners in their cells instead of mass feed halls,
right?
You know, limiting communal recreation facilities in these jails and isolating them. What better quarantine is there than our nation's prison?
I mean, I think that's the flip side of the argument. You're right. And I'm not hearing that made all that often, frankly, outside of, you know, folks like yourself. But I think that that's something that we absolutely do need to be talking about. And you know, going back to the discretion of these officers and allowing these officers to use their discretion, I 100% agree with you. Because, you know, you look at some of the crimes that in Philly, for instance, right now, where officers are being told on the 4 to midnight shift, all right, well, don't make any arrests on this. Retail theft. You know, I think you can make a really good case, Rob, that shoplifting groceries today is a far more serious crime than it was 2 weeks ago. And that, you know, I know that we've sort of been moving towards this model of, well, we're not going to prosecute retail theft under, let's say, $100 or so. If somebody's walking out of a grocery store with $100 worth of groceries or $100 worth of toilet paper or $100 worth of cleaning supplies, I think that matters a little bit more than it did 2 weeks ago. And yet, you know, that person is going to be allowed to basically be let go on their own recognizance. Meanwhile, let's say in Philadelphia, you've got somebody who's carrying a firearm for self-defense. They are concerned about an increase in violent crime right now. Maybe they're a legal gun owner, but they don't have their concealed carry license, but they're just playing it safe when they go to the grocery store. Is that the person that you want to arrest? Because under these new rules, yes, apparently that would still be an arrestable offense. And I just, you know, I have a real hard time. And I would have a hard time if I were an officer right now telling somebody I'm going to take you to jail simply because you, you know, were walking down the street with a firearm that you legally own but don't have a license to carry.
Yeah, and they're making a great case for this. I mean, just by the policies that they're pursuing. You know, and they would pursue someone who was looking to protect themselves and their family 100%.
Absolutely.
You know, carrying that
yes.
legal firearm that they weren't carrying. You know, it's part of their progressive agenda. This just falls into it. And who can blame them? They are giving the greatest example, real-time example, on why the Second Amendment is so important in this country. They're in Philadelphia, where the carrying of a firearm is extremely limited.
You know, I know you and I have talked before about your time in the New York Police Department and getting out and moving to Pennsylvania and seeing, okay, this is a very different scenario than the New York City, where the right to bear arms was really seen as a privilege. Do you think that the situation that we find ourselves in right now, is this going to be a wake-up call for a lot of Americans in places like New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, even Philadelphia, where the right to keep and bear arms has been seen as a privilege, or it's been treated as a privilege, it's been seen by many as an anachronism? I mean, we've all seen the lines out the door of gun stores in Los Angeles and Los Angeles County over the weekend. And I'm just curious as to how many people you think right now are in a city or a state where it's very difficult for them to get a gun right at this moment. And they're starting to have some second thoughts about the gun laws that they supported a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I know you've been talking about it for the past couple of days. I mean, look at the gun stores. Look at ammunition stores. That's the most underreported story in this nation right now, where people are flocking to these places. And, you know, I just saw a gun store owner saying they don't even care what kind of gun it is, what the make, what the model, what the brand is. You know, just any firearm to help protect their family.
Yeah.
You know, it'll take a lot more in these protected inner cities like in New York, like a Philadelphia, like a San Francisco, like a Baltimore, for them to realize that, hey, this is your God-given right. This is your constitutional right to protect yourselves and your family. And it takes a time like this. Hopefully we don't get there where it's that kind of mayhem to where it needs to be utilized, where people are needing that firearm. But isn't the whole purpose of it is having the comfort to know you have it?
Exactly. I think that's why you're seeing those lines. I'm with you. I mean, look, I still firmly believe that as abnormal a time as we are living in right now, this is not the new normal. And I hate hearing people say that phrase because there's nothing normal about this time. And we know that this is not permanent, right? I mean, Dr. Fauci is even talking about the current guidelines being for 15 days. I don't think it's possible to lock down a society for months at a time. You know, I know we've seen some scare reports of, 12 to 15 months. I don't think it's literally impossible to keep a society on lockdown for that amount of time. It's just not going to happen. So, but we do have, I don't think it's an unreasonable fear. I think it's a reasonable fear that a lot of people have at the moment because the future is so uncertain, right? It used to be, even just a couple of weeks ago, Rob, that we could kind of plan out a couple of months ahead. Somebody would ask, hey, you know, I'm getting married this weekend. What are you doing? And we could say, yeah, you know, I'm available that day. I'd love to come. We're not in those days at this moment. And so I don't think it's unreasonable for people to be concerned and to want to protect themselves and their families. I think that is that's a natural instinct that we are seeing playing out around the country right now.
Yeah, and that will be exacerbated in these inner cities. You know, we live in rural America. You in Virginia, myself in rural Pennsylvania. You know, we're pretty self-sufficient here. The people around here know how to take care of themselves. They don't really depend on government for a whole lot. Where if this does extend for that amount of time, months, you know, these inner cities, the infrastructure will begin to collapse. They are not capable of fending for themselves. You know, the restaurants, you know, they depend on a lot of fast food, the supermarkets, you know, the supply chain, you know, the everyday life, these big cities. And that's where this will come more into play with your Second Amendment and being able to really protect your life and property when it does get to that limit, if it does, and hopefully not, in these inner cities. You know, I think a lot of America will fend just fine. You know, we've seen this through crisis throughout America. You know, when it hits these towns where it just totally devastates a whole town, they come together and they deal with it. But these inner cities aren't built like that. They're not their way of life isn't like that. They won't be able to maintain that. So, you know, the federal government is basically breaking this into 15 or a 2-week period, mm-hmm. you know, to look at the ever-changing data. You know, let's look at the next 2 weeks and hopefully it can change. You know, I can't see just from the economic impact them keeping what they're trying to do now. They're trying to lessen that bell curve to meet whatever demand there is for intensive care units and the hospital beds. You know, the same amount of people are going to get sick in America. It's just over time where a health system can support it, or one spike like an Italy, where it just overwhelms their system tremendously.
Right.
That they're trying to prevent. I mean, I think after 2 weeks we'll see a reevaluation. You know, some of the businesses will go back into operation because it just has to for our economy. And you know, if it starts getting bad or worse than they expect, then they'll deal with it at that point. But that's why they're going with these 2-week increments.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about, if we can, just what how law enforcement is reacting to this right now, beyond the orders to you know, limit arrests in some circumstances. How are departments around the country changing their staffing? What you know, you talk about in New York City, you got a lot of, you know, frontline officers who don't have the PPE, they don't have the personal protective equipment that we would like them to have at this moment. So what are departments doing to try to ensure that you've got enough healthy officers, you know, to be out on the streets and to try to keep crime down?
Yeah, I've really seen the gamut. I've reached out to law enforcement officers all over the country. You know, I've seen the policies where the NYPD just this morning came out and said that if you're an NYPD officer and you come in direct contact with COVID-19, confirmed COVID-19, if it's only for several minutes, you're still okay to work, which is against any guideline that they're putting out there. You know, if you're directly contacted by COVID-19, they're quarantining these people. That's why they're shutting down society. I understand they have to keep the police infrastructure in motion. Some departments are going to minimum staffing because they're expecting those officers to go sick, and then they could pull the staff that they had off back in to take their place. You know, places like the LAPD are doing a phenomenal job in protecting their officers as far as policy goes with exposure, where the NYPD, who should know better after dealing with issues like 9/11, are utterly failing. You know, they're showing pictures of warehouses of equipment, but I'm speaking to the officers day in and day out that are getting expired hand sanitizer, non-N95 rated masks, if any masks, you know, one pair of gloves for an entire shift. I posted the picture of these on my Twitter account. It's just the officers, I encourage the public that when they see the police officers out there in their daily work, say, hey, what kind of equipment are you getting? What kind of training are you getting? And let them see for themselves, are there police officers that are out there to protect their lives and property being equipped properly to do this during this pandemic?
Yeah.
What I'm seeing is it's a wide spectrum. Some are utterly failing, mostly the larger police departments, and some are really rising to the occasion.
You know, I know that my local sheriff's office put out a statement yesterday, basically, you know, and again, we're rural Virginia, right? So I imagine they don't have a huge stock of PPE equipment on hand. And so our sheriff's office came out yesterday and said, basically, you know, if there's an active crime situation, call 911, and we will respond just as we normally would. But if it's not an active crime situation, call the emergency number, and we're probably going to take a report over the phone so we can limit our deputies' contacts with, you know, people who might be carrying the virus. And that's, you know, one of the public steps that they've taken to try to limit that exposure for officers. But as you say, we don't have a one size fits all police department, you know, all across the country. So we're not going to see one size fits all solutions here.
No. And see, those are good, you know, taking reports. We could take reports anytime. And that's where it differs from something like Philadelphia is doing, where, you know, they're telling people outright, you know, we're not going to arrest you if you commit this crime. You know, no, we'll arrest you if you commit any crime, and we'll deal with it a certain way. But, you know, if it's just taking a report, if it's non-essential issues, those type of things we can do over the phone. We can take internet reports. You know, we can take phone reports. You know, if you're giving information or just giving a status of something, you know, those are things you can do with distant contact. You know, those are proactive approaches that we should be looking at, not just saying, hey, we're not going to arrest bad people.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Rob, again, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk with us, sir. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Please give our best to all of the men and women in law enforcement that you run in contact with today. And hopefully we can have you back on again very soon.
Sounds great, Cam. All I have to say is, you know, the people out there, look after yourselves, look after your families, look after your neighbors. big government is not out there to look in your best interest, and we'll get through this just fine after we hit its peak.
Absolutely. Rob O'Donnell joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our recidivist report, as well as our good deed of the day. We'll start with our recidivist report from Utah, where police say a drunken man broke into a broke into an apartment, then grabbed a child inside when he should have been behind bars to begin with. This was Murray, Utah. 22-year-old Jorge Hernandez Figueroa arrested over the weekend for investigation of child kidnapping, aggravated burglary, aggravated assault, robbery, criminal mischief, failing to stop at the command of officers, interfering with an arrest, as well as intoxication. It was early Saturday morning, according to KSL.com, that multiple residents of an apartment complex contacted police to report that Hernandez was knocking on doors. According to a police affidavit, Hernandez broke open the door to one of the apartments, found a 9-year-old female victim inside. He put the child victim into a headlock and then forced her outside of the apartment. That's when he was confronted by another tenant who said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And he ended up letting the girl go, and then he ran off. When police officers arrived at the scene, they located Hernandez Figueroa nearby. He ran, tried to hide in a nearby balcony. He admitted that he had been drinking alcohol and stated that he was drunk. Now, check this out. In June of last year, less than a year ago, Hernandez Figueroa was convicted of burglary, drug possession, and assault. He was sentenced to 1 year in jail. Less than 1 year ago. And he was already back out on the streets. That was not his first offense, by the way. In 2017, he was convicted of aggravated assault in exchange for 3 counts of aggravated kidnapping being dropped. That was in 2017. So that was his first offense, a violent offense. He took a plea bargain. Charges were pled down by June of 2019. Despite the aggravated assault convictions, he's already back out on the streets. He's arrested again, burglary, drug possession, assault. Slaps on the wrist, and months later, he walks out a free man. Now he's back behind bars again. Second time, the 22-year-old has been arrested for attempted kidnapping charges. And we'll see if these slaps on the wrist continue. Our armed citizen story from Charlotte, North Carolina. We don't have a lot of information on this one yet. It happened in the overnight hours, but police say a woman shot a 17-year-old, one of 5 individuals who attempted to rob her at gunpoint when she was in her car at a cash machine. According to WBTV, happened about 2:30 in the morning. A woman had, pulled up to one of the drive-through ATMs. She's busy getting her cash, and all of a sudden, the 17-year-old and 4 others pop up, try to rob her. The woman says that she shot the 17-year-old in self-defense. The 17-year-old called 911, told officers that he had been shot. He was taken to the hospital with serious injuries. WBTV says police right now are working to determine whether the shooting was justified. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to predict that they rule that this woman who shot one of 5 people who was trying to rob her in the ATM drive-thru, they're going to find that that was justified, that that was a case of self-defense. Now, we'll keep our eyes on this. We'll let you know for sure what happens. But based on the information that we have currently, yeah, that's a real clear-cut case of self-defense. And finally, our good deed of the day. I don't have one special person today, but I do want to just say a huge thank you to all of those men and women around the country right now who are not able to stay home, who are not able to shelter in place, whether you're working at a grocery store or you are putting on a badge or you're in the back of an ambulance right now or you are in an emergency room or you're in an ICU or you're collecting trash or you're driving a truck or any other number of essential occupations right now to keep the backbone of this country straight and strong. I want to thank you for the good deeds that you are performing, and I hope that I am not the only one telling you this. Again, I was struck by this yesterday when I was at the grocery store, that, we're being told shelter in place. We're being told maintain your social distance. We're being told if you don't have to go out of the house, don't go out of the house. And there are a lot of those folks who are unable to take that advice. They might want to, but they're simply not able to. And so to those men and women, my sincere thanks. I think I speak for the audience when I say that we all thank you for what you're doing right now. your very, very good deeds. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Thank you for tuning in to the program today. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all around the nation, how the coronavirus is impacting your right to keep and bear arms. The news is changing by the hour, so make sure that you are visiting BearingArms.com throughout the day for the latest information, as well as the TownHall.com family of websites, TownHall.com, HotAir.com, Red State, Twitchy, and maybe, oh, Pajamas Media, can't forget them as well. And we will make sure that you've got all the information you need to know about how the coronavirus is changing the world in which we live right now. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you here tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.